So, Brian, how can my real estate photography business grow and stay on the cutting edge?
You need to start using HDPhotoHub.com. All you do is upload your photos and your clients get a property website, social media flyers, and videos all automatically.
That sounds pretty good. So how do I get started?
Well, it's pretty easy, Rich. All you do is register at HDPhotoHub.com. If you use the referral code SHOOTINGSPACES, you get your first property marketing kit absolutely free.
Free?
I did say free.
Okay.
HD Photo Hub is where great photos become a powerful marketing kit. Again, that's HDPhotoHub.com.
Welcome to Shooting Spaces, a real estate photography podcast. Discussions on gear, technique, industry news, and interviews with the best in the business. Now, here are your hosts, Rich Baum and Brian Berkowitz.
Welcome to Shooting Spaces, a real estate photography podcast. This is Rich Baum in Sacramento, California.
And Brian Berkowitz in New York.
And we want to welcome you to this week's episode of Shooting Spaces with Brian Berkowitz. How are you, Mr. B?
I am doing fantastic.
I call you Mr. B from now on. I like that.
Hey, that's fine. Okay. I'm doing great. Yeah, the weather has changed here on the East Coast, and I'm shooting a lot now. A lot of designer shoots coming in, a lot of architectural stuff coming in, and filling in all those gaps with the real estate stuff. So it's getting busy full force, and we're going strong.
Exciting. That is so great. It is so funny because we all worry in the slow times, January, February, whatever, and then it gets a little busy and we're like, oh, kind of gets busy and then it backs up for me. And then it's just been gangbusters for 2 or 3 weeks now. And I'm just so thrilled, but I certainly can't complain.
And you're doing some weddings now, aren't you?
No, I got another week. Oh, God. Knock on wood. Another week before I start weddings. And my first wedding's on a Monday. Imagine that. But I don't have to get the day off from my boss because I'm my boss. So it's another work day for me.
All right. Sounds awesome.
Yeah. And I'm doing some architectural. I always use architectural because I'm not an architectural photographer, but I have been doing a lot of design work, and that has been really, really a nice change up. I really enjoy it.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, I'm going to use that segue, speaking of architectural photographers, and jump right into our guest today, because there's a ton to talk about and I don't want to waste any time between the banter back and forth between you and I, Rich. And I know you love when I say banter. But I want to welcome our guest, Jeffrey Totaro. He's based out of Philadelphia, if I'm not mistaken, and you're an architectural photographer in Philadelphia. Thanks for coming on.
That's right. Yeah, Brian, Rich, thanks very much for having me on. It's a pleasure to join your podcast. Yeah, I'm located just outside of Philadelphia in a little town called Gladwin, which is right near Villanova for basketball fans. Everyone who likes college basketball knows Villanova. So, I'm an architectural photographer. In a previous life, used to be an architect and engineer. That's kind of how I got started in the photography end of things. So I studied architecture and structural engineering in college, and then got the photography bug way before that back in high school, and just didn't quite understand which route of photography I was really interested in. And it honestly took a while to understand that architectural photography is actually a thing you could do, and that people do this full time, and it's actually something that people take seriously. So the real brief story is I worked as an architect and engineer for about 5 years after I graduated college, and then took a great once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to work with my mentor, Tom Crane, who's in my neighboring town here. So back in 1996, which sounds like an awfully long time ago, Tom welcomed me into his office and learned a ton from him, and then eventually started working with clients on my own. So I owe Tom a lot.
You were shooting, when you started, you were shooting film.
Shooting film, yes. Yeah. That was certain things I miss about film. It sounds strange, but mostly like the camera, the 4x5 cameras were just like really fun to use. And I worked with a kind of unusual one made by a guy in South Africa. It's a 4x5 view camera, but made specifically for architectural photography, and that was super lightweight. And it was just had the movements that you need for architectural photography. So, but yeah, film was like torture. We would get, if you called me up and said, "Hey Jeff, we want to shoot a restaurant." I'd be like, okay, we can guarantee 3 shots in 9 hours. So let that sink in a little bit for people who never even considered film, because everything had to be perfect in camera. Everything. There was nothing you could fix later. So sure. That was just,
I mean, I've said this before. I kind of started my photography career as the film days were dying out in the wedding industry. So when I started assisting, my father, who's a wedding photographer right outside Philadelphia, also actually in your area. I started assisting on the 2 1/4 Hasselblad backs. And, you know, when I started shooting weddings, I started shooting with the Hasselblads. And within 3 years of me doing that, I kind of had to sell my two bodies I had and go to, I think it was the Fuji S1 at the time, which was the best camera ever. And now I look back and I'm like, huh. But first off, I want to thank you for coming on. I just want to let everyone know, you know, I came across your podcast on TWIP, This Week in Photography, a couple weeks ago, and I reached out to you. I thought you'd be a great interview because of the specialty niche of our listeners. So again, thanks for coming on with us today.
Sure.
I'm actually curious about something you said just now, getting started, that you have a background in architecture and structural engineering. Is that what you said?
Yes.
Uh-huh. I've actually heard from a bunch of architectural photographers that have a very similar background, as opposed to other people like myself. I have a photography background and I guess decided that architecture is kind of the route I want to go, / real estate, / you know, design work, that type of thing, or interiors, however you want to call it. So how has that benefited you? I mean, has it benefited you significantly? Does it help you look at spaces differently than I might look at spaces, or Rich might look at spaces, somebody that doesn't have that background?
I think it does. And not to say that you can't be a successful photographer without that background, but some of the things that it does help with is, first of all, like the communication with the client, right? Mm-hmm. So, because a big part of any business is really the communication with the client and understanding their needs, understanding what they consider important. So when we have a conversation, you know, a lot of times before I'll shoot a job, we'll go on a scout. So we have a conversation with the client during that job, and they'll talk about all the design concepts and things like that that they're trying to accomplish. And so with the background in architecture and design, I do sort of understand where they're coming from, even just the vocabulary that they're using about how they discuss the design. So I would recommend that people interested in design, if you don't have a design background, just get familiar with just architectural terms. Just understand what was that soffit? What is that? You know, what is, you know, what's cove lighting? What's all these different elements that architects are going to talk about? So that sort of thing helped a lot. And also just getting started and gaining clients. I worked in a very large architectural firm, so I knew a lot of people when I first departed there and got into the photography end of things. So for me, I didn't start out shooting real estate. I sort of jumped right into shooting architecture and design.
So well, you had like a built-in client base, if you want to call it that, at that point when you're starting. So that definitely helps you.
Yeah, just today on a shoot, I realized I walked off the elevator. We're shooting this one space for a client, and I see a furniture company that I've done work with before. But the woman who works there, I used to work with 22 years ago. So I sent her a quick email and say, hey, we're on your floor, come say hi. So I'm still very much in touch with people I used to work with, 20 some years ago.
Awesome stuff. Yeah. So let's talk a little about the work you do. Do you do mostly, I mean, I'm looking at your website now and we didn't plug that. So let's plug your website for people that might be listening to a computer that might want to check out your work while we talk. Why don't you just give us your website URL?
Sure.
And Instagram or any social handles you want also.
Sure. Absolutely. Thanks. My website is just jeffreytotaro.com. It's JeffreyTotaro.com. That's also my Instagram handle, at jeffreytotaro, and also my Twitter handle. But honestly, I just sort of cross post from Instagram to Twitter anymore. So,
sure.
Not on Facebook. I am on LinkedIn. I guess that's just my name as well.
What did you do before social media?
Yeah, I honestly was one of the sort of the last to get in. You know, I never was really interested in Facebook, and then Instagram came along, and that seemed like, well, you can't be a photographer and not be on Instagram. seemed like a no brainer.
I hear. So I'm looking at your portfolio and your website, or looking at your slider for now at least, and I see, you know, while there are some residential, a good majority of your pictures are commercial stuff. So do you primarily focus on the commercial architecture versus residential?
Yeah, I do love shooting residential. I have a lot of great residential clients, and I wouldn't mind having more of them, honestly. I do enjoy the residential a lot because it does allow it's just a nicer scale sometimes, you know, like the big commercial buildings are great to shoot, and that is the majority of my work. So I do like doing that. Mostly it's between like commercial office space, which we often have to shoot on weekends so mm-hmm. that we have control. I teach a workshop and I teach all the whole week long about control. That's what architectural photography is. So that's one reason why we shoot these office spaces on weekends, so we can control not just lighting, but my clients often bring in people to be on the shot, so we can make sure the people are dressed appropriately and where we place them, all that kind of thing. So I also shoot a lot of healthcare projects. Part of my architecture work way back when was being a healthcare planner. Mm-hmm. So I'm pretty well versed in the way that healthcare design works as well. And then there's a variety of other kinds of projects, like academic projects, universities, or I have one client who does a lot of work with private schools. Mm-hmm. So it's that's what I like about it. It's a variety of building types. Yeah, mostly, yeah, you could say mostly commercial, institutional, and industrial, religious, that sort of thing. And maybe 20% is residential.
Cool. Yeah, I'm looking at your stuff now, and you know, I just hit the portfolio page, and I do see a couple of residential shots, but your commercial stuff is fantastic. I see
the new college house is extraordinary. Oh, yeah.
That was a great project.
Yeah. If you're out there and anybody's not watching or checking out the website now or when you get home, I recommend you do, because some very inspiring work.
Thank you very much. Yeah. Yeah, if I may, that one particular project is interesting because it was it's a great architect. First of all, it's Bolin Sarwinski Jackson, who one of their Pennsylvania offices designed the early Apple stores, which I didn't get to shoot any of those, unfortunately. But their Philadelphia office designed this new college house, which is just tremendous. It was a huge project. It's a residential, a residence hall at the University of Pennsylvania. But it was a great site. They're really wonderful people to work with. But it was interesting from a photography point of view because the building is overwhelming. So I went, we had the official scout with the client and the contractor and some other people, and then another secondary scout. And I went myself a few other times before the shoot. I just had to get my head around it, understand where the light was going to be. Mm-hmm. We had, I think I delivered about 120 finished photos of that wow. building, which is a lot for, and it was, several days of shooting and things like that, but really, really fun. And, that's interesting that you picked that one, because that was just like...
Well, let me ask you about something you just mentioned. Mm-hmm. Obviously you went and did a scout. In real estate photography, we obviously don't do that ever. There's no money there to do a scout. Is that something that you do fairly often on a architectural shoot? And on that note, is that something that is built into your price that you charge extra for and require it? Or mm-hmm. is it just, talk a little bit about the whole scouting process.
Sure. I think scouting is very, very important because it's an opportunity for me to get to know the project, because I most likely haven't seen it unless it's a very open public project. So I often ask the client to send me ahead of time on any renderings they have, which I this is sort of virtual scouting, if you will. So they'll mm-hmm. send me renderings or maybe snapshots or drawings. And the renderings are important because you have to understand that's what the whole design team and even the client, they've been looking at those renderings for a year or two or 3 years, and those are important views to understand. Like, they picked those views to render for a reason. So I like to see those things before I can actually go on site, or at least during the scout, because then once we're actually on site, and I'll just bring, a handheld camera and we'll do a lot of snapshots and things. but it's helpful for me to see those renderings, so that I can see is it a valid shot? Is it a shot we can recreate? Because sometimes the rendering camera is buried in a wall somewhere that that they were able to take out digitally. So mm-hmm. scouting is very important because I can really discuss with the client the goals. If there are a lot of parties involved, like the architect, the contractor, maybe some furniture vendors and things like that, there might be a lot of opinions, and we don't need Monday morning quarterbacking after the shoot. So it's helpful to lay out all the scouting opportunities, like here's this kind of shot, that kind of shot, and then everybody's on the same page about what to expect from the final shoot. So it's not just like production scouting in terms of where are the power outlets, what's the sun doing, all this kind of stuff. It's also about managing expectations, mm-hmm. which I think is a very important thing in any business, but especially with photography. There's likely multiple people on site for the shoot, between myself, my crew, my client, people they may bring to the shoot. So we really have to be very professional, make sure that everyone understands what we're there to get, And so that all starts with the scout. And oh, in terms of pricing, it's built in for me with any local job. So mm-hmm. I don't charge my clients. If I have to run into the city to look at a job, maybe I can schedule a couple scouts. If it's an out of town project, like I have to go to New York next week to scout a project there. So I generally just charge my travel rate. I know you guys talked recently on one of your shows about travel. Mm-hmm. So I charge like $75 an hour for travel. So I'll charge my travel rate plus, you know, the train ticket, and then maybe a small little digital post fee, $150 or something like that, for the scout. So maybe the scout comes out to $500 for the day or something like that to go to New York, for instance.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But if you're even like a local shoot, for instance, you're not spending more than an hour or 2 hours max, I'm guessing, on site. You're not, it's not a half day thing or all day thing. It's just
no.
Sure, you get to the point, get you know what you need to get and get out of there.
Exactly. So a typical scout for like an office interior shot shoot would be pretty much just an hour. Get there with the architect or the interior design team. And we'll literally just walk through, take some snapshots. This looks cool. That looks cool. And then we're pretty much out. And then I just send them a PDF mm-hmm. of the shots, and then they can all share that. So a lot of my clients, they get that PDF and they will print it out in color, and they'll tack them up on their on a tack board somewhere in their office, and they'll all sit back and say, yeah, something like this, something like that, this one, but maybe a little more to the right, or let's get make sure we don't get that thing because that thing wasn't built right, something like that. So it's because you have to understand the difference from the real estate photographer and the architectural photographer. The architectural photographer is much more concerned about all the subtleties, the materiality, the color, the texture of things, and how well things were built, if they were built correctly. Something you hear in the architecture world a lot is VE, value engineer, which basically means something got chopped out of the project for budget reasons. So if something was VE'd, to the point where they don't want to see it anymore because it's just got completely destroyed, then that's something that I may not know. So that's part of the whole scout. And so somebody may say, this thing wasn't built right, let's not show that. Mm-hmm. So all that, because on the real estate side, obviously the photos have a different audience. They're trying to appeal to a potential home buyer. They are trying to basically sell something in a relatively short period of time, versus the design side, which is much more concerned about the legacy of the project and archiving the project and making sure that the design work is communicated to also to the design community, because that's mostly who looks at these things, or other designers, architects, jury members in awards submissions and things like that.
Cool. Let me ask you, let's go this route, because the majority of our listeners, as I said, are real estate photographers. Mm-hmm. So for our listeners that might be interested in kind of taking a dive and making that shift towards, architectural or even design photography, which I kind of put in that same respect, mm-hmm. one level up from where they are now, obviously practice. I mean, sure. Just keep shooting. But what are the logical next steps for somebody to, besides honing on their technical skills, just go out there and potentially try to look for work? And obviously, you're not going to get work like the University of Pennsylvania if you've only shot real estate. We understand that. But any advice for people that are just trying to, whether it's finding, I guess, newbie architects or something like that, any advice for you that you can give some of our listeners?
Sure. I think I've given this advice to a lot of people who ask that question. And it's a great question, because you want to move from here to there. It's sort of a route that I took, but not with any real plan. It just sort of happened this way. So when I worked with Tom Crane, there were a few opportunities I had to do some shoots for contractors. So, and some of them were large, like commercial contractors, but the difference is it's sort of like a hybrid in between, or let's say just a middle step in between real estate and architectural work. So, and these were more commercial building contractors versus residential. So if you want to move away from residential, not that there's anything wrong with it, but if you want to make a clearer distinction of saying I shot this house for a real estate agent versus I shot this house for an architect, you could try to move into working with more commercial contractors. And the reason I mentioned the contractors is that they are certainly concerned about the quality of the photographs, but they often don't attend the shoot. Like, I like to have my clients on the shoot. So you really have to have your legs under you in terms of being able to work quickly, efficiently, and confidently about what you're doing and make decisions quickly and understand where you want to go. Mm-hmm. So if you're just trying to get your feet under you in terms of doing this kind of work and maybe transitioning into more commercial buildings, if you can get some work from a contractor, they may come to a scout if you can do a scout, or they may send you a floor plan and say, this conference room, this lobby, this thing, go do it. So the advantage of that is that you can be on site. Maybe it's just you, or maybe you bring an assistant, which I highly recommend. But you can take your time a little bit more. You can work on the compositions a little more carefully. You can arrange the furniture and try this a little bit more. But you have this opportunity to be in this space. You're allowed to be there. You're being paid to be there. But maybe you have the opportunity to take your time a little bit more and try some different lighting techniques, or anything, even get different compositions. Maybe you want to try one composition three different ways and get back to your office and figure out which one you want to present to the client. But I think that having that opportunity, the access to an interesting space, and then the time to experiment are things that I think would really benefit people versus going right for the architects, who are generally more concerned about the photos and generally want to be more involved. So I think that's one thing you could definitely consider.
Great. I'd like to ask a couple of questions, and I'm always kind of a gear geek, and I know that we all talk about what we use in real estate photography, but I just wanted to know, as far as modifiers and lights, what are you using? Hot lights? Are you using strobes? Are you using soft boxes? What's kind of a part of your kit? You've mentioned are you now working DSLRs? Are you using digital backs on format cameras? What do you got going on?
Yeah, I use, when I jumped into digital from film, I waited and waited and waited until I could have a camera system with in-camera perspective control versus a software correction. So I waited. So the first digital system I got was a phase one digital back on a Cambo camera. And then I think I'm on my third or fourth digital back. I'm working now with a phase one IQ300 trichromatic, which renders colors a little more neutral in a nice way. And I use that on two different ALPA, ALPA, ALPA.ch, if you want to look them up. Mm-hmm. They're a Swiss company. They make beautiful cameras. They're one of the few that make these things called technical cameras, which allow you to have it very similar to 4x5 film, have in-camera perspective control. So you can manipulate the camera to keep your vertical lines parallel. Very similar to a tilt shift lens, but just the body of the camera does it. So I work with two different ALPA cameras and the phase one back, and I really enjoy that system. Part of what I really liked about working with the view camera is this in-camera perspective control. So I wanted to have that because I almost felt like, handicapped in the sense that if I couldn't see the photo in its proper perspective controlled way, I couldn't take it seriously. It just didn't fit my brain. Like, I didn't quite get the geometry, and trying to fix it later was going to be, in the early days, was too complicated. You had to process it out in Photoshop and then fix it in Photoshop and then shoot another one and do the same thing again, at least now in Capture One and some other package. You can do a keystone correction right while you're tethered to your computer. So that's great, because then it follows into the next captures. That's another piece of, just to answer the equipment question, I always do shoot tethered as well. So 95% of the time, always shooting tethered, often because the client's there, but often because I want to see a large image, because I want to study every detail, make sure the furniture is placed right, make sure everything's just right. And then on the lighting side, probably the last eight or so years, I've only been working with strobes. I have I just dipped into my hot light case tonight to pull out an Omni light as my key light over here. But so for podcasting, I use hot lights. but for my kit includes six Profoto D1s. They're 1,000 watt second heads. But quite honestly, I don't use them as much anymore since Profoto came out with the B1, which is a 500 watt second battery powered light. So I have two of those, and those are tremendous. They're just great. They're very robust. The newer version of the battery lasts a long time, and I wish they had a little more power, because I'm often shooting at like f/11 at ISO 100. So, they're great. But just in terms of creativity and things like that, the strobes are great for residential work, because a lot of times in residential we'll shoot with all the artificial light off, mm-hmm. and we'll just use pure daylight, which is a look I really like, because the color renders so much more naturally, and you don't have these big bursts of of yellow light coming from a light fixture or chandelier or something like that. So
yeah, I mean, that's a problem we all face daily, yeah. Especially as real estate photographers. It's yeah. I don't have to tell you.
I suspect that your clients prefer to see all the lights on, right?
For me personally, usually, yeah. I mean, yeah. it's like Rich just went like that. Yeah, it varies, but most of my clients like everything on, overhead lamps, this and that. So you just right. get such a horrific mix of color.
Yeah. yeah, that can be tough. I mean, sometimes I'll shoot, if a client does want some lights on, I'll shoot it just like I'm saying, with none of them on first. Mm-hmm. I'll get my lighting keyed to that, and then I'll put them on. And maybe we'll blend them together, make it look like their own, but they're not contaminating the room.
Correct. Yeah, I'd actually do a very similar workflow in my, I guess, architectural, more design work, where I'll shoot mm-hmm. the whole shot with it off. And then my last shot, I'll take one with the exposure on and then kind of just add a, maybe like a luminosity blend mode mm-hmm. layer after. So I'm getting that light come into the fixtures, but no color come in. So it works.
Yeah, pretty well. Yeah, exactly. That's a great technique. Yeah. So that helps a lot. Yeah, for sure.
And one thing I want to point out, is the work you're doing is probably a lot easier in that respect, as far as the using the existing the lights in the building, because they're not the same. When you've got a model you're shooting, a beautiful building with the architect, chances are they put a lot of thought into each and every one of the lights. So mm-hmm. that really helps. And do you find that you're always involved with just really, really well thought out lighting in your subjects, the things you shoot?
Yeah, that's a great thing to point out. Lighting has come a long way since LED technology has gotten so prevalent. You see crazy light fixtures, you know, like the things that are just ribbons, you know, it's like, I don't know how there's no way it could have been done before. So very creative things. My clients definitely take lighting into account, and I have a few clients that are actually lighting designers. So it's always fun to shoot with them. But I would say one thing, as good as they are at the design work, they're still calibrating their lighting to the human eye. So in terms of color, because there are plenty of times where you look at something and like, oh, the color all looks pretty even. And then but the camera starts to see it a little bit differently. Mm-hmm. So there's that kind of thing. I have one retail client that in the last 2 years has finally started to lamp all of their fixtures to the same exact color temperature. So it's much better now. But they had multiple different color temperature lights. They had, I don't know if you've ever worked in space with those little MR16s. They could vary tremendously in color from all across the magenta green spectrum, mm-hmm. you know, within the same room. Anyway, but the lighting, so there's still a lot that has to sort of be compensated for, certainly with exposure. The design in terms of where the light is, like you're saying, is definitely great. And that helps a lot. But we're still mixing. Like today, we're shooting a space where we had a mix, still daylight with lighting in a commercial space. So if there's window shades, we'll often just pull the window shades down. And similar to the residential example of shooting with the lights on and off, we'll shoot with the shades up and down, and possibly even with the lights off if it's a small enough space where the daylight can light it as well. So I kind of, in this case, we did sort of three different exposures. You know, shades up, lights on. Shades up, lights off, and shades down, lights on.
doing the same thing, yeah.
Yeah.
When I used to work in the motion picture industry, I remember when we go on location scouts, the director of photography would always powwow with the gaffer, who's the key lighting technician, mm-hmm. and he'd have his best boy, and they would also always talk about what they're going to do beforehand, and many times they're sending in a crew the day or 2 days before, and let's say we're shooting in a Walmart, they'll go in and replace all of the lights, the fluorescent lights. They'll also, in office buildings, they'll gel all the windows. And it's funny, at the time, I was not as into photography as I am now, and I would have loved to have been more involved in just understanding what they would go through, because they're trying, you know, a lot of this was before digital. And especially when digital first came out, it was very, it didn't have latitude. It mm-hmm. was like you couldn't shoot with going from sun to shade, because it would just blow out. And they always had a guy in the background adjusting the camera for each second.
of the scene. But it was really interesting just to learn and to see how they're working with on such a large scale on things that we don't even hardly think about. So I would love to, I'm going to come to Philly and I'm going to tag along with you. And
sure, come on on.
do you always use an assistant or two?
Yes. I'm glad you brought that up. Yeah, I mentioned that, but I wanted to make that point again, that if you are looking to get more into working with designers and architects, and I think an assistant's crucial. People often ask about, you know, what camera should I get, what lights, things like that. That's all very important stuff. But people say, what can I do to make my work better? I'm like, start working with an assistant. I'm like, well, how's that going to help? Because it allows you, it frees your mind. Because if you were, say, well, oh man, I didn't think I was going to need my lights. They're still in the car. I don't feel like going to get them. I'll just make it, I'll fix it in post. But if you have an assistant, you're like, hey, go get the lights. You know, let's light this thing up. Or anything, or if you want to move something, because often, and we're moving furniture around all the time. So having an extra pair of hands, it's also just a much more professional look to your business. You come, you know, there's two of you that show up. You know, it just helps tremendously in everything. Let's say you're shooting in an urban environment outside and you've got your camera set up. Maybe I have a cart, I've got the computer on the city streets. So I have a lot of stuff exposed there. So what happens if a FedEx truck pulls up across the street in front of the building? You know, it's like, I just have to wait. But if my assistant can run over and politely ask, hey, would you mind just moving up to the next few spaces so you can get out of our shot? So that kind of, so you'll get more photographs in a day. You'll get better photographs in a day. I know that the real estate budgets don't really allow for an assistant, and you guys end up being really, really efficient on your own. But imagine taking that efficiency and then start partnering with an assistant on larger shoots or shoots with architects, for instance, and things are really going to go smoothly. So I think that, I think it's something to really consider, and it has to be built into the cost. So it's a line item on my estimate. I have my fee, assistant, digital post-production. It's right there. They can see exactly what it is. Every now and then the client will say, I could be your assistant. And sometime every now and then, if I know that the client's really, really hands-on and maybe we don't have to do a lot of lighting, and it's just mostly about shuffling stuff around and moving my equipment around, I'll say, okay. But a new client who offers to be an assistant, absolutely not. Because I don't think, they either don't know or I don't know what to expect. So,
sure. Yeah. Now you just touched briefly on pricing or the way you bill it out. So, you know, I definitely want to get to that. And you mentioned that you have your fee, you have an assistant fee, you have post-production. So, I mean, I know because I watched your other podcast, but why don't you explain to people how you as an architectural photographer, how your rates work and how you bill out. And then, you know, I know that we, you know, I was talking to you a little bit beforehand about, you know, you were saying the state of the industry might be changing over time. So we can dive into that a little bit too.
Sure. So let's take a bit of a more overhead view of sure. commercial photography, because I think that's it's important to understand like where architectural photography and real estate photography fall in that sort of hierarchy. Mm-hmm. And I did talk about it in the other podcast, but so basically, if you're thinking about commercial photography, things are priced based on the usage. So somebody calls you up and says, hey, we want to do this shoot, it's going to be, so the first questions that we ask are like, well, roughly how many photos we want to do. There's lots of other details to talk about, but the next biggest question is, what's the usage? As real estate photographers, you know, the usage is we're going to, you know, put it on the website and we're going to sell this house. Mm-hmm. So there's not a lot of use beyond that. In the commercial world, usage is very important because it does determine the price. So somebody could say, well, we just need collateral, which is basically like brochures and website, things like that. Or they could say we need advertising too. So advertising can open up the big money door in terms of if the client's got the budget for it, because advertising is priced based on what's called the media buy. So is it going to be on billboards? It's going to be like, I have a couple photos running around right now in buses and bus shelters in Philadelphia. Mm-hmm. So
I saw those on your Instagram.
Oh, cool. Okay.
The library, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Okay. Free library, Philadelphia. Yep. So it's fun to see. So, but the way that those jobs are priced, just briefly, is so they determine the usage and they come up with a number per shot, right? So imagine if, as a real estate photographer, you're being paid per shot versus like a flat fee, for instance, then you'd be probably more excited about getting out there and like, all right, let's go out and get this. So things priced per shot, and that price per shot, if it includes advertising, could be $1,000 a shot, $2,500, $5,000 a shot. Depends on the use, the client. if you're working with an agency, all these different things that can determine that number. So it's a fee per shot potentially, plus all your production expenses, assistance, equipment rentals, all this. So, you know, commercial shoot for, you know, like a some sort of manufacturer or something in the building trades or furniture company, things like that, could potentially, if it's an advertising use, could get $50,000, $75,000, $100,000. You know, it could get really, really high. But now let's take the advertising out and let's reduce the usage a lot. And really just down to the bare minimum, essentially, like website, a little bit of brochure and award submissions. And now we're down to where like the architects and engineers and contractors are. So it's a much less substantial usage. They're not doing advertising. So the usage gets cut dramatically. And yeah, quite honestly, they just don't have the budgets for it. So the architectural photography world, unlike the fee per shot model, is still pretty much a day rate, which is essentially pay me this per day and we'll go out and we'll get more or less as many photos as we can in that day, or however many you think that we're going to get. Mm-hmm. And then in my model, I have the fee per day plus a charge per shot for post-production. Mm-hmm. So you could think of that charge per shot as all post, or you could think of it as some post and maybe some additional fee per shot for usage, for instance. Depends how you want to think about it. So the advantage of doing it that way versus just a flat fee is that your client may be tempted to really run you ragged and get, you know, 50 or 100 shots out of you in a day, which for me would be ridiculous, the very high number, because they think they have you for the day. It's a flat rate. I'm going to just get as many photos as I can. And my model is kind of in between. It's like they know it's going to cost a certain amount to get me on site, and say I made an estimate and it's 10 shots for the day. That's a full day for me, typically. Then if they want some additional shots, they have an idea it's going to be additional charge per additional shot in terms of the post-production. So it helps to curb that sensation that they want to just get more and more photos. So, and my understanding in the real estate market is it's pretty much a flat rate per house. Is that right?
Yeah, there's a lot of different ways people charge. A lot of people charge per square foot, which is how I used to go. Some people charge by image, which is what I do now. I charge essentially, my price is broken down by image, but I charge X number of dollars for a 20 image package. And I do that because this way, if I shoot a 2,000 square foot house or an 11,000 square foot house, which is what I'm doing on Monday, it doesn't matter. My time on site is the same because I'm going in, I'm shooting 20 images, and I'm done, unless they want to pay above and beyond the 20.
Right.
So the
11,000 square foot house, though, could definitely warrant more images.
So yeah, I'm going to end up paying more for that.
Sure.
I mean, out of the 11, it's crazy. Out of the 11,000, 3,000 of that is their indoor pool area. It's definitely be more than 20 shots for that. So that's the way I try. I think you're by square foot, aren't you, Rich? Or you used to be?
50-50. I'm still trying it out for 2019. I'm kind of moving towards that direction because can you imagine, Jeffrey, the MLS max where I live is 99 photos. Can you imagine to a job and they're expecting 100 photos? No. We all decided that... It's pretty much everybody, at least in my neighborhood, is going with per image. And I like that because that's what I do for design. And if I do any kind of an architectural shoot, it's all on pretty much what you said, on what do you plan to do with it, and then per image. And, you know, I'm still
working that out. Is that similar, like a package deal like Brian was talking about? Or is it actually, if they only want five images, it's that times five? And is it prorated at all?
Real estate, it's no, you, I have 15 images for so much, 25 images, and then 30, 35 or 36 images.
Got it.
So it just depends on what you need. And most of the stuff that I shoot, it's really 36 anyway. And realistically, I think that it's my pricing going per image is kind of rolls off the tongue and the ears easier for my clients once they grasp it. Some aren't going that direction. So I'm staying with my other, but per square foot, but I'm just a work in progress, you know, trying to figure out what makes sense for you and for your clients. And nowadays, There are so many new real estate photographers, and I'm probably guilty for a lot of people coming into this business and becoming successful. Whereas, you know, I'm sure that I've cut myself out of some work myself, even what I'm doing in my neighborhood. But
it's not a bad legacy to leave behind, Rich.
No, I'm okay with it. Actually, I'm gonna be 62 in a week, and I'm just like I'm on my way out, baby. No, but the education has really been where I want to be, and it's wonderful because you know, whereas a lot of these people were soccer moms or just, you know, people thinking about it, and then they get into it, and then they start learning that you don't know what you don't know, so you got to learn. And then you learn about the art of photography and many of the same things that that you do, I do, and you know, I think that it's all part of it. But the pricing is always the toughest part of like my YouTube channel. I don't talk about pricing because it's just not fair to me. It's not fair what I would charge. I can't charge what you're charging. Or sometimes I might charge something different than more than you would charge on something else. But I just find it varies from person to person, where your neighborhood, your sure. Your clientele, what people are your competition is charging. So pricing is always the hardest. And I know that sometimes people will go in one of the Facebook groups and try and get a price for a commercial shoot like you would be doing, or maybe not even on the level you're doing. And then some people would say, well, you should be asking $2,500 an image. And then I might think that person should probably be asking about $50 an image, you know? So it's really, it's not fair for me to tell you what you should, you know, charge. It's just not
apples. It all comes down to the model in my mind, like what's, you know, how are you going to put it together and be consistent from client to client as best you can.
Yeah. And you've got a back. I mean, by the way, if forget your website, for me, I just went to your Instagram account. You want to see the best behind the scenes pictures of gear porn. You have got the best pictures because it is all so cool. And I love your camera, and I would love to come out and assist you one day.
Let me know if you're coming out. Absolutely. love to have you along.
How much I got to pay you to hang out with you.
I should take a trip out. You're just 90 miles down the turnpike.
Yeah.
I said it first. So, and Jeffrey, I want to ask you about your workshops. I know you do workshops. Oh, sure. I do real estate workshops, but my workshops are geared for the people that are, I call it, in the trenches, trying to get into day-to-day real estate. But we all aspire, and I'm always into telling people to aspire higher. And I would say you're probably where I'd like to be. I don't think I'll ever get there, but where I'd like to be. And tell me about your workshops, because they're so important. For people, the education part, we're all crazy about gear, but tell us about your workshops.
Yeah. Thanks for letting me bring that up. I do workshops just once a year. It runs through the Palm Beach Photographic Center in West Palm Beach, Florida. And since it's in West Palm Beach, Florida, we do it in February. So it's usually the last week of February might trickle into the first few days of March. And it's a 5-day workshop, which is a great amount of time. Sometimes it doesn't even feel like enough. And we split each day between going out shooting roughly half the day, and then we'll be in the classroom half the day doing post or talking about. I'm really an open book for that week. So we talk about everything involved with the business, you know, marketing, estimating and billing, anything really, all the boring stuff too, insurance, you know, all the nuts and bolts of really just trying to have a good business, in addition to all the fun photography stuff. So we managed to find some really good locations this last year. We had a great location person with us this year. And so we've shot, we shoot like in this one church that has us in. We shoot, there's a new addition to the Norton Museum there. So we got in there to shoot this year, which was really fun. And I started doing it in 2008. It was handed to me by Norma McGrath, who's definitely one of the more senior guys in the architectural photography world and someone I admired for a long time. So I got to know him around the time when digital was starting to come in. And then he started to feel like he wasn't prepared to handle or wasn't interested really in handling a workshop that was more geared around digital photography. So he asked that I take it over, and I'm like, it sounds great. So yeah, I've been doing it now for 11 years. So it's really a lot of fun. And you can find information. What's that?
How many days is it?
It's 5 days.
Wow.
Yeah, it's usually a Tuesday through a Saturday. That way it only interrupts one weekend for people. And you can find out more information at it's just workshop.org. And oh, wow. I think the dates, I don't know how they got that URL, but it's just, I think the dates are up for next year. I think it's the last week of February for 2020.
So it's once a year workshop.
Yep. Yeah. They would probably have me do it more than that, but the winter times, the slower times, so that's when I prefer to do it. And I did do once a workshop with Phase One. They have their Phase One digital artist series. Mm-hmm. So myself and another photographer, Chris Barrett, in Chicago, we did three or four days. But that was geared for Phase One. So that was more about them getting cameras in people's hands and them going out shooting. My workshop is run more as a demonstration. Mm-hmm. So we'll all work together on one shot at a time, essentially. So lighting it, moving the furniture around, talking about composition. Because as you guys know, there's so much to communicate when you're trying to teach this kind of photography. Mm-hmm. It's not like landscape photography where the goal is to get you to the top of the mountain at dawn and everybody shoot. This is more about why'd you pick this composition? Why'd you pick this time of day? Why are we using this lens? That kind of thing. So for me, I do the most talking I do all year in that 5-day period. So.
I have a workshop coming up May 13th and 14th. So I know.
Oh, terrific.
It's so much work, and I have a lot of respect for you doing it for 6 days, because mine are just 2-day workshops.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, it's fun, but we always manage to get, how many people are in your workshops typically?
I normally, just if it's just me teaching, it's 10 people.
Oh, great.
I find that's more than enough people.
Yeah. Mine is usually a few less than that, which is actually fine, because it's hard to bring all these people on location. So,
and it's very hands-on with the instruction. So, mm-hmm. Yeah. Great. Terrific. Awesome, man.
Mm-hmm. All right. Great. Thank you, Jeff. Well, we're running low on time, so we're going to start wrapping it up here. But why don't you just give everybody your social handle and your website one more time. If they missed perhaps the beginning of the episode, they can go back and check out your work. Because Rich was talking about your Instagram. I'm looking at your Instagram now also. I see all your...
It's super cool.
Yeah, I see all your medium format digital stuff.
You got more cool toys than I got, buddy. That's a lot.
Yeah. Thanks for the opportunity to plug again. So my website is jeffreytotaro.com. It's jeffreytotaro.com. And that's also my Instagram and Twitter handles at jeffreytotaro. So thanks for the opportunity to put that out there again.
All right, cool. And I, obviously want to invite everyone to check out your work. And I know Jeffrey personally, because you said this on the Twit podcast, and that's how we touched base. You said it, if people have any questions about architecture, mm-hmm. feel free to reach out to you. You're very Absolutely. Open like that. Yeah. Like both of us, we're very willing to share what we know. So, we commend you for that, because, Rich and I do it for our industry, and you do it for yours, and it's commendable.
I think it's important to help teach people. I'm primarily self-taught, aside from everything I learned from my mentor, Tom, but mm-hmm. I didn't go to school for photography, in other words. So people who write to me and say, hey, I'd like to get into photography, I always try and give them some pointers. So I'm happy to speak with people, and not to plug the workshop, because if one person takes it or 10, I get paid the same. But we do have at least 50% of the people that come each year are real estate photographers looking to get more into design photography. So it's really well geared to that if you want to make that next step. So if people are interested, send me some emails, and I can tell you a little bit more about the workshop.
All right, awesome.
I might just be contacting you, Jeffrey.
Come on down.
Yeah. Okay, I'll be there in Florida. Hey, so Brian, I think we got to go, but take us out. Tell us what we need to do.
Yeah, just, as always, everyone subscribe to our email. We send out emails all the time now with our blog, new articles that are coming out. We got some new writers that we're working with now, so you'll hear some new stuff. Jeffrey, we have a blog. If you ever want to write an article, by all means, we invite you. We'll post it up there, no problem, if that's something you're interested in. Maybe something on the transition from real estate, because that's the majority of our listeners.
Yeah,
no pressure. thanks everyone. Subscribe to our email list and submit your Ask the Guys questions. We never have enough. We have a couple in the queue that we're going to try to get to, but we like filling in those dates where we don't have guests on with some Ask the Guys questions. So definitely submit those. And Rich?
Yeah, what a pleasure, Jeffrey. Thank you so much for your time and your expertise. It's very, very well received on this end. So
thanks very much, guys. Yeah, I really enjoyed coming on.
And as you said, it's we named it Shooting Spaces because
we didn't want to pigeonhole into real estate photography, but it really is. It comes down to shooting spaces, and you're that's what you do, is you shoot spaces. So whatever you do, Jeffrey, go shoot some spaces. This episode of Shooting Spaces has been brought to you by HDPhotoHub.com. Helping your real estate photography business grow and stay on the cutting edge. Just upload your photos and your clients will get a property website, social media flyers, and videos all automatically. Register today at HDPhotoHub.com using referral code SHOOTINGSPACES and you get your first property marketing kit absolutely free. HD Photo Hub is where great photos become a powerful marketing kit. Again, that's HDPhotoHub.com.
This has been Shooting Spaces, a real estate photography podcast. Subscribe to the show and don't forget to leave us a review. You can also follow Rich and Brian on social media and at their website, shootingspacespodcast.com.